You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. Courage comes from the Latin cor, which means heart. To encourage means to hearten, to impart strength and confidence. This is our work as a church, to encourage one another, to be bold in engaging the world around us, as well as what scares us internally, to give one another the confidence and heart to live as fully as possible. Let us affirm our relationships with one another. Let us recognize our agency and our connective power. Let us accept our responsibility to be bold and courageous. We light this chalice today as a symbol of our truly shared ministry to encourage those within and beyond our walls. Well, good morning to you all, and welcome to this service of worship. We do call it a service because its intention is to serve you, and it is called worship because it serves you by raising to worth things that matter. My name is Rob McPherson, the minister of this church, and I offer this acknowledgement of country written by Aboriginal poet Jonathan Hill. Today we stand in footsteps millennia old. May we acknowledge the traditional owners whose culture and customs have nurtured and continue to nurture this land since men and women awoke from the great dream. We honor the presence of these ancestors who reside in the imagination of this land and whose irrepressible spirituality flows through all creation. And since 1854, this church, likewise and in its own way, has upheld the ideal of spiritual community on these hills and plains. And we do this by encouraging all to find, fashion, and follow their own spiritual path, any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world for all. Please join us after the service for coffee, tea, and conversation. Begin by singing our opening hymn, "So Simple is the Human Heart." Stand as you're able.
A little sun, a little rain.
For a moment, stretch back in memory to the first time you attended a meeting of this church. What was happening then? Were you comfortable, anxious, pleased, hesitant? Remember those moments. Who are the first people you met? Along the way, between that first time and now, what friendships have you formed? Whom do you now trust who was formerly a stranger? Feel the warmth of this community. From back then to now, what have been the most important events of your life? The rites of passage, birth, dedication, coming of age, weddings, separation, divorce, death. All the things a spiritual community is privileged to encompass. The connection between people living on this earth. So now, consider the influence of this community on you and your children. We have come to this hour to expand our hopes, deepen our vision, and stretch forth our hand, knowing not what we shall touch, but wanting to link our lives with other lives. We have come to give and to receive.
This service builds on last week's. We explored mental health as a journey with a spiritual dimension. Illnesses like depression and anxiety are on the rise, a cultural disease in developed societies like ours, where a loss of meaning and a loss of connection are increasingly prevalent. And we considered that church communities offer a unique space in the wider community to support vulnerable people in finding and building meaningful connection, some of it more meaningful than others. So maybe listen to last week's podcast to get a bit more context. Have you visited our podcast site, by the way? All these services are recorded for you to listen to at your leisure. We will soon be having a TV program on Community Channel 44 as well, of these services, so you can keep up that way. But whereas last week we focused on the individual journey and what church community could offer a person lost or broken or searching, this week I want to focus a little bit more on how we, vulnerable adults, might collectively make our church a place where we can truly be our brother and sister's keepers, where the lost or broken or healing can themselves create the meaningful connections and find belonging in a caring community as a needful network of support to maintain the spiritual and mental health our times so need. Building the caring community where people might find meaningful connection comes down to trusting folks who are not your kin, or indeed not known initially to you very well at all. As you'd know, trust in churches and religious institutions is not at an all-time high. There are lots of good reasons for this, including much publicized systemic breaches of trust, like clergy sexual abuse and its enabling, or the greed and venality and hypocrisy of megachurch leaders. Conventional churches have done much to break not just their own brand, but the whole religion business. But one of the key reasons for a lack of trust in churches stems from the very reason for a church's being, radical hospitality. To be truly redemptive, the very nature of church is inclusion. So a very low bar is set to membership. All are welcome really means anybody's welcome. The bar might be set low, but it is still possible to trip over a low bar. It's good for churches to keep in mind that trust is itself a vulnerable commodity and can be as easily broken as we ourselves can be. Sometimes the all and anyone's coming from an absolutely general public through our wide open doors and into our open arms and open hearts may be those few who are so damaged that when they see a group of vulnerable, nice, gentle church folk, you know, people like you, they see an easy opportunity for narcissistic supply, dominance, predation, money, whatever self-seeking motive is driving them. And this has become more of an issue since we are in an era of history where church is in steady decline. And in an atmosphere of decline, our hunger for new memberships may more likely blind us to letting in wolves among the sheep. But having mentioned and acknowledged this low road, I don't intend to take it today. I don't want to give untrustworthiness all the airtime. And besides, I've already examined the topic of church predation in a blog post called "Oh Please Do Come In, Mr. Wolf." You can read it later if you care to. You maybe visited the blog site. You can read about that in detail. But today's talk is going somewhere else. Think back on David's reading today. Another trust issue that may arise for us is from the fact that a lot of people just shoot through a free church like ours. You know, people come to you and they're trying to work some things out. They come for a while, they get what they need or not, and leave one day. And don't get me wrong, that is absolutely fine. That's cool. Offering hospitality freely to all who come isn't conditional. It's the essence of church. But look, it can be hard to quantify or even express the grief that you can feel after you've let people into your hearts and minds, and then these same entrusted folks just disappear one day. I look around every Sunday, and I can't help think of all the faces I no longer see here. Not people who've passed away, but people who've maybe moved away or went elsewhere or just gave up on church altogether. People I've shared deep and personal things with from this pulpit and in pastoral dialogue. People I've laughed with, worked with, cried with. To whom I've given and from whom I've received loving kindness. Was our trust misplaced? Is it possible to be too trusting? So simple is the human heart, the song says, so ready for more hope and joy that we drop our guard too easily. Does the loss of people make it easier to trust each other or harder? Obviously, such departure is not a deal breaker because not everyone shoots through. Some others stay, and they make it their business to offer loving kindness to others, the same loving kindness they themselves have found, and make sure this place is here to provide them a space that's safe and caring. And when that happens, that is more than cool. That's the spirit at work in a healthy church. So that's an indication that being trusting is not necessarily wasted time and energy. What about you? Do you consider yourself a trusting person? How many people in your personal life do you really trust with important things like username and password? How many of you have come to trust others in this church context? And how did that trust come to be? Gradually? Suddenly? Accidentally? Or by one of you just taking the risk? Let me ask you this. Which of these three things would you be most afraid to lose? Your keys, your wallet or purse, or your phone? Do you know which that would be? Well, take it out right now. Go ahead. Whatever you're most afraid to lose, your key could be your keys, could be your wallet or purse, could be your phone. Take it out. Hold it up for all to see. There it is. That's what I'm afraid to lose. For me, you can put them down. For me, it's my phone, which you can see is also a wallet. So it's a kind of double whammy. In here is access to all my email, social media, my pictures, my bank account, my ID cards, my credit cards, my membership cards, my whole so-called life. The last time I thought I lost this, it was like I got hit with an ice hammer. Yeah, I felt that freezing jolt, that fight or flight shot of cortisol your brain gets. And I did what I call the little dance of panic. I literally ran around in mad little circles, panting like a dog, scared of thunder. If somebody found it, would they return it? Would they steal my identity? Bankrupt me? Hold the phone to ransom? Or just indifferently chuck it away? I ran down the street, retracing my steps, looking around, looking in absurd places, under cars. I even lifted up a cat. I must have looked like an absolute lunatic. In fact, I was at that moment, because suddenly there was this total stranger holding out his hands like you'd hold out water. He had my phone. And he just said, "I think you dropped this, mate." I nearly dropped to my knees in awestruck gratitude. I offered him $50, but he wouldn't take it. He said, Oh, you'd do the same for me or someone else, I'm sure. Would I? I would like to think so. And I would like to think I'd meet such obvious vulnerability, not with greed and not with indifference, but with proactive, loving kindness. And so would you, I'm sure. So I'm going to ask you to do a little experiment with me now. That thing you identified as the thing you'd least like to lose?
I don't know Leslie from Adam. Not your partner. It's not fair. Somebody else.
Take care. And Rob has written in the text, pause for action. Now, I'm going to do the second hymn. Holding this person's precious object in your hands, please join me in singing, May I Be Filled with Loving Kindness. We'll have Margaret play it through once, and so we'll catch the tune. And I want you to hold it. The words will be on the screen. As you're able. Intentional communities like this church can create what is called social capital. And in a fragmented world drained of meaning and connection, social capital is critical not just to the success of communities like ours, but social capital is also critical to the spiritual well-being of those who come here seeking and ready to risk deep connection. How well we do that, how safe we make it, is dependent on being willing to trust one another. Now, I know it can seem hard in this context. How are you feeling right now with your precious in someone else's midst? The famous theologian and Nazi resistance martyr Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, "The church is that which exists for others. Others is the crux." Bonhoeffer also said, "The church is where you find yourself sitting next to others you'd probably otherwise have nothing to do with." But I'm not so sure that's such a big deal. If you're here intentionally and not out of sloth or habit or duty, you've probably got more deep values in common with others sitting next to you than with any random assortment of co-workers or school chums you might find yourself arbitrarily thrown together with. So why not dare to trust those who sit near you today? So here's the problem for us as a collective. How does a community of the vulnerable and those willing to risk vulnerability build a robust, functional community out of vulnerable parts? St. Paul famously likened the church to a body made of incomplete, isolated parts that only works when each part subordinates itself to the good of the whole. But I know many of you break out in a rash when the Christian Bible is mentioned, so you might prefer to recall the more natural ecological insights about how geese succeed by flocking.
When you see geese flying in a V formation, you might be interested to know what scientists have discovered about why they actually fly that way. As each bird flaps its wings, it creates an uplift for the bird immediately following. By flying a V formation, the whole flock adds 71% greater flying range than if the bird flew alone. People who share a common direction and sense of community can get where they are going more quickly and easily because they are traveling on the thrust of one another. Whenever a goose falls out of formation, it suddenly feels the drag and resistance of trying to fly alone, and quickly gets back into the formation to take advantage of the lifting power of the bird immediately in front. If we have as much sense as a goose, We will work in formation with those who are headed where we want to go, and be willing to accept their help as well as give our help to others. When the lead goose gets tired, it falls back into formation, and another goose flies at the point position. It pays to take turns doing the hard tasks and sharing leadership. With people, as with geese, we are interdependent on each other's skills, capabilities, and unique arrangements of gifts, talents, and resources. The geese in formation honk from behind to encourage those in front to keep up their speed. We need to make sure our honking from behind is encouraging and not something else. When a goose gets sick or wounded, two geese drop out of the formation and follow it down to help and protect it. They stay with it until it gets better or dies. They then launch out and join another flock or catch up with their old formation. If we have as much sense as the geese, we too will stand by each other in difficult times as well as when we are strong.
Thanks, David. Unitarians around the world love and cling to that reading as spiritual direction for community, but you only need to have been at the ANZOA conference to know that humans can be less socially functional than geese. Why? Well, we're more complex creatures with a key inherent contradiction, or paradox, or design flaw. On the one hand, humans have achieved our moral consciousness and evolutionary dominance as a species because we're social creatures, so a propensity for trust is inbuilt in us. On the other hand, we are also weak creatures, always ready to fight or flee at the first hint of threat. Now, this has kept us safe from bigger, faster, stronger species, which is most of them, which also suggests that distrust is also inbuilt. So there's that paradox. We have the capacity for both. And the increasing lack of connection with others since the modern age, and as the photograph shows, it's not just a 21st century phenomenon, okay? Newspapers, iPhones. Our increasing lack of connection with others favors our fight or flight response, making distrust more likely rather than less. So with your phone or your purse or your keys resting in someone else's grasp right now, which do you feel more? Trusting or distrusting? Do you, as a member, feel safety and trust generally toward those here, or do you only trust those who've already merited it? If trust is an issue for you, you may be interested to note that there is an emerging field of social science research called the science of trust. Recent studies from a wide range of sources confirm three things. Trust increases with intelligence. That is, more intelligent people tend to be more trusting. So, if you're not a trusting person, maybe not so smart. Second, that people who are trusting are happier and healthier. That means they enjoy greater social capital. And finally, that trust can be built. Therefore, a choice. Many researchers who have studied the sociology of trust note that trust is, of course, essential to healthy relationships, and that most people surveyed consider it a greater compliment to be trusted than to be loved. And since trust implies a certain degree of uncertainty, trust is the willingness to be vulnerable to others. So, a choice, a willingness. So, in a world of uncertainties, trust is a desirable personal skill to develop. Now, scanning the material on this, there seems to be a fairly simple strategy for building trust and enjoying the social capital that comes from it. Be the first. Have a generous heart. Be the first to trust. Patience and flexibility. You have to recognize that trust is built over time and repeated application. Dependability is how it's built, being loyal to your word, and when you screw up, apologize, don't make excuses. Make it habitual and consistent, and be honest and transparent in your dealings. So again, scanning the sociological material on this is the suggestion about how trust can be built. Generosity, patience, dependability, consistency, openness. I'm sure you're all capable of these. Be the first. As Hemingway said, the best way to find out if you can trust somebody is to trust them. Last time, you'll remember, I put flyers on your pews encapsulating our approach to pastoral relationships in this community. There are more in the foyer if you want them. And they describe not only the care you can trust this church community to offer you, but more importantly, it offers you the opportunity to build your own trust by offering your pastoral caring support to others. To receive, but also to give, is how you build trust. I mean, you must realize, I can't possibly do all the pastoral caring myself. And even if I could, by some superhuman, Superman powers, all ministries end one day. The best thing for you as a community is to build up that web of caring fellowship amongst yourselves to future-proof the supply of caring support this community can offer. Church fellowship is uniquely placed. It might be the last social institution to actively develop trust reflexes amongst its members as part of its normal work. Members who come all and anywhere from a diversity of backgrounds, wanting a diversity of things, but needing, truly needing, only a few. A little love, a little trust, a place to dream together and belong. Like all social capital, trust doesn't come spontaneously, but can be built by reaching out to whomever God or luck or whatever you will has thrown next to you in this space. If you flex that trust muscle, you find it grows, and you will be better able to trust more, and everybody will reap the spiritual benefits thereof. Again, this is a choice. I speak this to you today in knowing. Every week, even if I don't see or communicate with each of you individually, this is public worship. So I stand in front of any and all every week with a presumption of trust. I open my mind, my heart, and my life experiences to whoever come. Whoever comes, any and all. Now, if that is not you being trusted, what is that, if not you being trusted? A greater compliment than love. Beyond that, many of you have honored me with trusting me in pastoral confidence with your darkest secrets, your scariest fears, your mad passions, your noblest dreams, your highest aspirations, your heartbreaking regrets. Trusting me, or at least trusting the ministerial role. Again, a greater compliment than love. But I call on you today to make trust not a linear two-way transaction like radio, but a multi-directional network of interaction amongst yourselves, like the internet. On the back of the notices today, you will see there are copies of our membership covenant, which is how we as a church institution try to ensure this is a safe space to trust each other. Read them in your understanding of today's talk. And now, you can get your precious back. That's a relief, eh? But do this. During coffee hour, find the person you entrusted it to today and thank them and say this: thanks for letting me trust you. Or, thanks for trusting me. Maybe that is a greater compliment, after all, than love. Amen. Thank you. pulse of this new day, may you have the grace to look up and out and into your sister's eyes, into your brother's face, into your country, and say simply, very simply, with hope, good morning. Amen. Have a great week.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitariansa@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.